What is going on? Thank you for tuning in to the MMA Podcast, a special birthday edition of the MMA Podcast. That's right, our good friend P Money. It's his birthday today, Pat, at Sweet Pappy Jones. Everyone tweet him your birthday wishes, Pat. What's going on, bro? Happy motherfucking birthday, my man.
Oh, thank you, Jake. Thank you. You're far too kind. Well, it's another fantastic day, another fantastic year in the life. No complaints on this end. You know, we're hitting up that BNP Paribas today, or Paribas, pardon me, BNP Paribas. It's going to be a full docket today. Paribas. Should be a good time seeing some of the top-ranked tennis competitors in the world. But fuck it, this ain't a tennis podcast. I'm not really that big of a tennis fan. It's just the only thing to do on a Thursday that is my birthday. So fuck it, that's where we're going. But very excited for this coming weekend. Got some good fights. Had some good fights this past weekend, Jake. A lot of fun stuff in the MMA department, too.
Tennis, a sport where you don't need to know the rules, but just get, you know, either a couple beers in you, a couple grav bong rips. I don't know what sort of thing you are inclined to do, but you don't even need to know the rules. It's a beautiful game to watch, chill, spectate, enjoy with the friends, family, enjoy on your birthday at the Paribas, or however the hell you say it. And we are blessed with tennis, blessed with some college basketball, if that is your direction. Got conference championship week this week, and of course March Madness kicking off next week. Or MMA, we are in the thick of the spring slate of the UFC cards just about every single weekend. Last weekend we had that Junior Dos Santos Derek Lewis card we're about to talk about this coming Saturday, which we are, yeah, this coming Saturday in just about 3 days, which we will get our teeth into in a minute. Darren Till taking on Jorge Masvidal in a big welterweight scrap. Ben Askren has flown to London to challenge the winner of that. It should be another fun weekend for the UFC. And I guess we'll start chronologically in Wichita, where last weekend we had a big heavyweight scrap between Derek Lewis and Junior Dos Santos. Before we get into that main event, I guess, like we usually do, we'll start with the prelims. Alex White winning a decision, Alex Morano and Matt Schnell with submissions, Maurice Green a split decision over Jeff Hughes, Grant Dawson a unanimous decision, former title contender Yana Kunitskaya defeating Marion Renault via unanimous decision 29-28 across the board, and Anthony Rocco Martin looking to make a name for himself, wiping out Sergio Moraes 30-27 across the board. Two notes from me on the prelims before I pass it over to you, Pat. One on the Rocco Martin versus the Sergio Moraes card. Martin may have a little bit of a future at welterweight. I just, dude, shave off those mutton chops. I don't know what you're trying to do with the stubble mutton chops. It's a look. You look. It's definitely a unique look, and that's what a lot of people are trying to go for in the UFC, but this ain't the one, bro. Shave off those ridiculous mutton chops. You're a great fighter. You got a lot of heart and a great personality, but my lord, those mutton chops are atrocious. Another point which I want to get to, which they actually talked about, and I'm glad they did, on the Ariel and the Bad Guy show on ESPN Plus. If you don't have a subscription over there, that show and the UFC collection alone is worth the $5.99 to subscribe to that service. But they talked about the 10-9 system and how it might not fully be appropriate for mixed martial arts, and this being a good example where Yana, on all three judges' scorecards, edged the fight barely winning it 10-9 in the first and second rounds, and then just getting her ass handed to her in the third round, getting her nose broken. I think it wasn't necessarily a failure of the system. I think Renault obviously won that third round 10-8. I don't know why the judges didn't see that dominance, if they just didn't think to give it to her. And I thought it was sort of an anomaly that Yana won both the first and second round 10-9 across the board, because I thought those first two rounds were close enough that it could have gone either way for all six spots to be filled in. 10-9, Yana, I thought, was kind of an anomaly. The fight was weird, but Yana ends up getting the victory there, along with Rocco Martin, which I mean zero disrespect. You are a hell of a fighter. You could whoop the shit out of me if you tried. But just shave those munchops off, bro. Pat, the B-Day boy.
Oh, man. Well, I think it's going to be hard for Tony to shave off the chops when Karen Bryant's encouraging him to keep him going. But
Karen Bryant's too thirsty.
I mean, she got some man, though. So, but anyways, that's none of my business. I don't keep up with celebrities or freaking anybody's dating life. That's neither here nor there. What I want to talk about, Tony Martin putting it together against Sergio Moraes. Jake, like you were saying, Tony definitely is looking very, very good at 170 pounds on a 4-fight win streak. I want to say he's 7-1 in his last 8 with a split decision loss to Olivier Aubin-Mercier being his most recent blemish, but he's really shored things up. I mean, he's looking fantastic everywhere. Young fighter, just 29 years old. Really seems to be coming into his prime, and I'm liking this trend of fighters moving up in weight classes, and I love seeing a lot of them do pretty well for themselves. I mean, of course, we always go back to Robert Whittaker, but now we can look at Tony Martin and say, hey, he was, you know, kind of up and down over there. I want to say this 4-fight win streak is the best streak he's put together in the UFC. So, good move going up to 170 pounds. And, yeah, some very good fights. Very interesting. The Kunitskaya-Renault fight was just definitely a highlight in MMA scoring, so to speak, because for myself, even that fight, most outlets scored that fight for Kunitskaya. Most of the media had it. I want to say there was 4 that had it for Renault. Nobody had it scored a draw, though. And for me, it's one of those things. If you take 2 pictures of these people, full body pictures, before and after, regardless of how long the fight went, or, I mean, of course, if there's a submission, something like that, that's straightforward. That's very clear cut. And likewise with a knockout or TKO. But if it goes to the decision, I mean, who got their ass beat? And you look at Kunitskaya's face, she got the worst of that fight. And I don't know how other kind of gradation you really need. Does there really need to be a mathematical kind of system? I mean, I suppose for the higher level fights, you have to have something, some kind of gradation, but it's really proven to be tough unless they implement something like, I mean, I swear to God, Jake, maybe even, and everybody's going to call me a fucking idiot for even saying this, but a kind of scoring system like they have or had in the UFC video games. I've seen them before. And it was very interesting because they are literally computing all these different factors that are going into the fight. The leg kicks, the body kicks, the punches, you know, all the
That's
elbows.
Kind of like an Olympic boxing type score set up, which actually Ariel lobbied for a little bit during the show. And even Chael chipped in, you know. MMA is one of the only sports where we don't have a scoreboard. And if you were somehow able to enact some sort of system where a significant strike is worth X, a takedown is worth X, yeah, different things are worth a different amount of points. The problem in that it would just be that MMA is so fluid, and in the moment, you know, it's easy to look back at a fight and count, okay, how, you know, was this a significant strike or not? But in the moment, it would just be incredibly difficult to try and quantify things like jabs, strikes, you know, and you talked about damage, which I don't think many people after that fight would argue, unless you're using the 10-point must system, which we do, that Kunitskaya won the fight. She obviously took a lot more damage, but when you talk about just apparent damage, you know, there are fighters whose faces break, you know, they have so much scar tissue around their eyes that their face will break up. You know, it's like apparent damage, I don't think, can really be a scoring criteria as much as we might want to make it like that, because, you know, there are guys who are just so, at this point, weathered that they'll take a light jab, and the next thing you know, with all the scar tissue buried under their forehead, their face is covered in a mess of blood.
Yeah, this is a good point, but, I mean, something like that, I feel, at least as far as cuts, that's superficial damage. That is kind of, that can easily be caused by a glancing blow, something that's not a significant strike at all. Joe Rogan has pointed it out before, just something that is in the, just the abrasiveness of the gloves themselves and the material that they're using. A grazing shot can, in a fighter that has scar tissue, or, you know, maybe not, maybe just, you know, someone with a disposition to cutting more, a glancing shot can open them up. Not necessarily indicative of hard shots or like big trauma, but just, I mean, let's be real, a paper cut can cut you open and make you bleed. So not necessarily the same thing.
Jackass too?
I mean, come on. But having your nose broken the way Yana Kunitskaya did, holy shit, that was very rough. And that was big damage. That was big trauma, completely inflicted by Marion Renault, by legal strikes. Something that I feel is very definitive. And although, granted, Jake, you're definitely right about in the moment, or even post-moment, because the fighter's not going to give you a necessarily 100% response. We're like, yeah, man, that shot fucked me up. I was hurting. They're going to be like, oh, no, you know, I was with it. And sometimes they are. You know, I think there may be just a little bit of embellishment sometimes. But watching a fight, how can you really determine what is a significant strike? Half of the time, I mean, especially with the commentators, they can't even, they're thinking shit connects when it doesn't and shit misses, or they'll, oh yeah, he hit him with this or that and it was a completely different strike or something like that. So if there is some kind of judging system where, you know, with the scoreboard, where as things are landing, as things are connecting, I think you would just have to do away with the notion of significant strikes, just kicks or certain, you know, certain strikes, a right hook, left hook, be it, you know, a touch or did it connect? That's really the only factor you can go off of. If it connects, you're getting points. If it didn't, you don't. Because whether, you know, how bad it hurt someone, that's virtually impossible to quantify. But the whole thing, I think under Pride rules, Marion Renault probably would have won that fight. Because it's, even though there's round systems, it's kind of just, they judge it as an overall, as opposed to, okay, you won this round, you won this round, they won this round. It's who got the best of it, really. And I think Renault, in the playground definition, won the fight. But in the sporting definition, the way we have the rules built right now, Kunitskaya won that fight.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Moving on to the main card, Omari Akhmedov. Man, we have got this scary group of guys from Russia in that area just taking over the UFC with dominant wrestling. Tim Boach, the latest victim to lose 30-27 across the board. Benil Dariush with an impressive armbar submission in the second round against a Drew Dober who was not looking bad at all in that fight. Blagoy Ivanov defeating Ben Rothwell 29-28. Nico Price, huge comeback victory. Tim Means looked like he was starting to put his game plan together. Price, the underdog, rallied back and throws up a TKO with 10 seconds remaining in the first round to knock off the Dirty Bird. And I'll save Dos Santos Lewis for its own talking point, but in the co-main, a big underdog win. And even though I still had Curtis Millender going in to that fight, it really made me nervous in interviews when you heard how cocky Millender. I mean, he was openly saying he was looking past his opponent, that there was no way Eliseu Zaleski Dos Santos would defeat him. Fast forward 2 minutes and 35 seconds into the first round, Curtis Millender is getting rear naked choked, and the underdog wins the welterweight co-main bout. Lots of fireworks. It was a really fun main card. ESPN is definitely getting their dollars worth as far as the content they're putting up. I'm sure there were a lot of new viewers of the UFC, and they definitely didn't go home wanting anymore. It was a really exciting main card. Pat, what were your highlights from the main card from Wichita?
Oh boy, the main card from Wichita, Jake. Plenty of highlights. I mean, really, all the fights were fantastic. Akhmedov versus Boach, good middleweight bout. I'm always rooting for Boach. He's been doing it for so long. Love seeing him in the octagon. He's been up and, well, up and down, basically win one, lose one. But he's been winning more than losing as of late. He's still looking good. Akhmedov, just, man, he's a tough out at 185. Dariush getting that submission over Dober. Very nice W there for Dariush. His grappling chops are just fantastic. And Ivanov versus Rothwell, old Big Ben Rothwell getting back in the octagon. And even though he lost to Blagoy Ivanov, I think that was that one for me. I don't know. That could have went his way. I wasn't paying the closest. I mean, I wasn't judging this thing. You know, we were just talking about judging earlier. I'm certainly not a judge myself. I was watching this one very casually, but fantastic fight. Love seeing both of these guys get in there. Really put on a good show. It's rare when you get the heavyweights going the full distance that it's a barn burner the whole way through. But man, they were throwing some heavy shots. Both guys were wearing it for sure at the end of that one. And at welterweight, my God, what an emotional roller coaster Tim Means versus Nico Price was. For myself, big fan of both guys. I've interviewed Tim Means back in the day. Good dude, great guy to talk to. Always pulling for him. Great story, just him personally, and puts on fantastic shows in the octagon. This one was no different. Man, Nico Price came out, had him hurt early on in the early goings of the fight. Hit him with some good strikes on the feet. Tim Means was able to take him down. Started beating the shit out of him on the ground. He was doing pretty good. Nico, he's got some good groundwork himself, though. Showed us the from the bottom knockout with hammer fists. I want to say that was last year. So he's definitely a very crafty one. Was able to force it back up to the feet. Tim Means was continuing to get the better of him, or was beginning to get the better of him on the feet. Got his rhythm there. Started hitting him with like a Stockton slap kind of situation. Was really, he was bitch slapping Nico Price for a lot of the beginning of the round. Was really piecing him up with his combos. If he would, I was wondering if his hands or if his knuckles were broken or something like that, or maybe if he broke his hand and that's why he was switching the slap. Because if he would have switched those to some punches, the way he was putting those things together, he might have been able to take it. But He was hitting him with a lot of slaps. Did hit him with some close fists, though. Had Nico hurt. He was rushing in, and then Nico had him hurt, started piecing him up once more, and ended up getting the TKO finish. It was an amazing fight. Definitely crazy. Both guys had the other hurt. Nico ended up getting the better of it. Man, great show. I was really hoping Tim would get a little performance bonus. Hopefully Uncle Dana took care of him in the locker room, because it definitely takes two to tango, and that was just a fantastic performance from both guys. But Eliseu Zaleski Dos Santos versus Curtis Millender, good fight as well. Dos Santos, man, he's campaigning for a big ranked opponent in his next fight. He's trying to get up in there, and I mean, I could certainly see his point. He's 7-1 in the UFC, and he was saying he should be 8-0. I'd have to go back and rewatch his debut. Apparently, there was a bit of a controversial decision in his debut fight. Not unheard of in MMA. So he's like, oh, you know, I should be 8-0. I don't even think he's ranked yet. But my goodness, he had 6 wins in the UFC's welterweight division. Not even ranked. That's kind of amazing. So, yeah, I'd like to see him get elevated into some ranked fights in his next bout. That'd be very good. Great finish from him. Definitely showing all the traits of a well-rounded opponent there, and a high-level prospect at welterweight for sure.
And that brings us to that main event, Junior Dos Santos versus Derek Lewis. Man, I was back and forth on this fight going up into it, but luckily it was actually a pre-fight interview I saw with Junior Dos Santos where he called out the second round finish that I don't know, it convinced me to lean that direction. And Derek Lewis, you know, you see a lot of finishes on his record, and wins and losses, takes the L here. You know, I just saw two guys with devastating KO power. Yeah, Lewis, I think, has probably a little bit heavier a punch. But Junior Dos Santos has really, you know, he's at 35, hasn't slowed down much. He still has the speed. More importantly, still had the footwork there. And I was really, really impressed with his performance just in December, where, like he did in this one, called a second round finish, went with JDS in the second round over Lewis, and was not disappointed. Before we get to who next for each guy, what did you think of the fight itself? Lewis, you know, you gotta for sure credit him for his you know, attitude to stand in there and bang, and for sure had a couple chances himself, but this now puts him on a 2-fight losing streak after losing, obviously, that title fight to the champ Cormier last year, and now another one to Dos Santos. What did you make of the fight, though, Pat?
Oh man, it was a great scrap while it lasted. Both guys definitely had their moments. Both guys hit each other with some good shots, if I recall. My goodness, all the fights lately. I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, Jake, but didn't Derek Lewis drop Junior Dos Santos in the first round? I want to say he did hit him with a nice little right.
I think both guys were in trouble for sure in the first round. I don't know if he fully dropped him, but he was, you know, both guys were wobbly at various points in the first.
Yeah, they were throwing. I was thinking of one particular instance. I want to say, I don't know, it was when, no, that was towards the end of the fight when Derek Lewis was hurt when Junior Dos Santos hit him with that spinning kick to the body. Looked like it was kind of liver, solar plex area. And Derek Lewis immediately, you could tell he was in pain. Started kind of leaning, crumpling over along the side of the cage. And as Dos Santos came in for the finish, he went to swing with like this uppercut. It just barely missed. I want to say he caught the back of Dos Santos's leg, or he tried to go through Dos Santos's leg and just caught like the quad with his biceps. Couldn't get the full extension on it, but was kind of pushed him down in the process, I want to say. But yeah, too much. It was too much for Luis Dos Santos. He could smell that the finish was there, and he just swarmed on him. Got that round two dub, cashing some big plus 600 tickets for all those big bettors in the know.
Dos Santos and Ganu, book it. Who do you want next for Junior?
Oh boy. For Junior, I'd like to probably see him. You know what? I think it's got to be against DC. He's had the trilogy fight with Kane. You know, he's on the rise. Dos Santos hasn't really fallen to many people. I want to say, unless it's maybe another fight with Overeem, I say give him DC. One of those two guys next.
Dos Santos could put his name in the hat for one of the best heavyweights of all time with a win against DC, as he's already got what a lot of people don't, and that's a win against Kane. Anything else before we move on? I know a lot of folks are just itching to hear us talk about that Conor McGregor news. Apparently, if what the victim claims is true, Conor McGregor is when I use the term coked up, I don't want you to think that I am alleging anything other than having a good time. When I say coked up, I don't mean under the influence of cocaine. That's not what I mean. When I say coked up, I mean he's revved up, he's partying, he's having a good time. So Conor McGregor was super coked up out front of the Fontainebleau in South Beach in Miami, Florida, the beautiful state where I reside, at 5 a.m. And he apparently was singing the lyrics to Blueface's Tatiana, or Tatiana, however you want to describe it. I guess Blueface is a rapper popular with the millennials these days. I have yet to confirm or deny if he does have a blue face, but I suspect he has a blue face. So the song, I guess he was singing, coked up, like I mentioned, super coked up, and someone goes to take a video of him dancing in front of this hotel. Connor sees this and realizes that this might be an embarrassing look for him. So he goes over, grabs the guy's phone from him, smashes it on the ground, and seeing that that wasn't enough, grabs the smashed up phone, puts it in his pocket, and struts off. Now, back in the day, in the era of Virgin Mobile, and or if your boy was rocking some phone on Boost or Cricket, it wouldn't be that big of a deal. But these days, those phones are worth, I mean, I think your iPhone X, you're looking at almost a $1,000 phone. So this kind of unfortunately does fall into the felony category of strong arm robbery, of assault. But the joke's on you if you think it's going to result to anything, because this will likely, in the eyes of the criminal courts, get pled out. Connor will offer the guy a ton of money to not appear as a witness in the case. And as a witness, and if there's not a witness in the case, the state has no case and will be forced to drop the charge. So he'll probably give the victim X amount of money. Who knows how much it'll be to keep him quiet. And in the eyes of the UFC, if he hasn't done anything criminally wrong, then who are they to punish their cash cow? This will not affect any sort of title picture or title shot. Not that Connor is going to fight anytime soon anyway, because like I've been preaching for the last number of years after he made $100 million fighting Floyd Mayweather, all of a sudden it's not really that much of a priority to make $5 million stepping into a cage, fighting a killer, risking getting your fucking eyeballs gouged out and your skull caved in to fight for pennies of what you have already made in a joke fight against the best boxer of all time. Moving on! Pat, any thoughts on Conor before we breeze by? I think I covered most of the bases there.
Yeah, you know, the first thing I thought when I had seen this in the news is I said, Conor must have a fight booked or something. Like, why else would this be? I mean, I thought this was like, you know, the Dolly incident. It's going to be hyping up their eventual fight down the road. And is this just Conor keeping his name in the news? Because Proper 12 ain't really taking off. I'm not seeing Proper 12 commercials these days or anything like that. Like, that came and went very quickly. This is just him trying to get his name out there. And yeah, absolutely. If he does get any kind of judicial punishment, it will be some sort of slap on the wrist. Something that will be convenient for him, actually.
Barring any new news on Conor, I don't know if we've had a statement from Dana or the UFC or anything, but if we do, I think it'll be nothing but what's expected. As far as other news coming down the wire, fight announcement wise, we have a fight at light heavyweight between a couple of top title contenders, Alexander Gustafsson taking on Anthony Smith. John Jones' last two opponents, who he dispatched with ease. Kind of a surprise that Anthony Smith is fighting on so quick a turnaround. He actually himself said on the Ariel Helwani show that he at first didn't want to fight again until the start of 2020, but was offered this fight and didn't want to turn it down. You know, you would expect after a beatdown like you saw in Jones versus Smith, you'd expect Jones to be the one taking a quick turnaround 2 or 3 months later, not Smith. But looks like the two will lock up. This is going to be an interesting match. I'm leaning, man, which way am I leaning here? I don't want to lean against either guy. I guess I'm slightly going toward Gus, but man, that's not to take anything away from Smith. If he finished this fight a la Rumble Johnson, I know that's well within Lionheart's capabilities. What do you think about this match?
Well, Anthony Smith definitely surprised me in his fight against John Jones. It was a more competitive affair than I thought it would be against John Jones. Smith had his moments, albeit fleeting, but he punched him in the face a couple times. But that's more than some people can say for having fought John Jones. And both similar height and reach. I think Gus will just have a slight height and reach on him, but both have good stand-up. I think I'd probably give just a slight technical edge to Gustafsson, but Anthony Smith, he looks like he's been doing a lot better these days. Even the ground, I'd probably give a slight advantage to Gustafsson as well. I don't know. He's definitely been doing better ever since he linked up with Phil Davis and started training with him many years ago. But Anthony Smith, in spite of coming off of a loss, he's got to be feeling decent about it. I mean, he had some good momentum going into that fight. And, I mean, there's been 24 people that have fought John Jones in his 26 professional bouts. And only 6 times has he been taken to the decision. One of those times was by Anthony Smith. So that in itself is kind of an accomplishment, albeit I don't know how great moral victory is feeling in MMA, but there is that for some sort of consolation as well, some sort of barometer, you know. The fact, you know, the durability, the heart that he had shown, that's something, you know, I wonder about
Alexander Gustafsson, not the heart, but maybe is he gun shy now? Just having felt some TKOs and having just gotten finished in the third round fairly devastatingly by John Jones. You know, how is he going to rebound from that? He rebounded from his first loss to John Jones with some good fights and a couple finishes, I want to say, but as of late, haven't seen quite so much. After the Anthony Rumble Johnson fight, I think it's been a little bit more of a cautious Alexander Gustafsson. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading things wrong on that one, but I feel like Anthony Smith's probably got a little more confidence in him right now. That's worth noting. I may be leaning his way right now.
Yeah, that's a fight where the wind will blow back and forth. I don't think I'll be stuck on one guy, but it'll be fun once we get close to that fight. June 1st, I think, is when we'll see it. In other news, the UFC's newest champion, Kamaru Usman, undergoes surgery for a couple of hernias. Luckily, the timetable to return is only 4 to 6 weeks, so he should be back in the gym. And hopefully we'll see a fight scheduled with him and Colby Covington sooner rather than later. The last bit of news, Paulo Costa apparently tests hot for the sauce. Who would have thunk? And we're going to see a rematch between Yoel Romero and Jacare Souza, a rematch you and I have disagreed on through the ages, and we're finally going to see Rand back. I don't have the date in front of me, but we will, looking like see a rematch of Jacare Souza and Yoel Romero after Romero has finished his reality show. I wasn't sure the details on that. But, Pat, thoughts on this last bit of news before we switch gears to our last topic of the night, which is previewing this London card at the O2 Arena, Till vs. Masvidal?
Yeah, this will be a good fight. Another classic scrap, good rematch. I mean, the first fight was pretty closely contested. I know a lot of people thought Jacare took that one. I think I was probably leaning that way myself. But it was definitely a close affair, I would say. I mean, Yoel almost had him finished in the first round. Jacare came back and, by most people's assessments, took the next two rounds. But Yoel got the decision in that one. So I'm sure I'm sure Jacare wants to run that one back. And Yoel doesn't seem to be shying away from any takers. Always love watching him fight. Always explosive when both of these guys fight. It's always a pleasure. Super high level MMA, and the last time they met, it was one that, you know, sometimes when the two super exciting, you know, oh man, something crazy always happens during their fights, those two fighters, when they meet, every now and then it doesn't translate into fireworks, but last time they met, it was pretty damn exciting. So I think we're gonna get more of that with their second matchup.
And that takes us to this Saturday. Everything kicking off a little bit earlier than normal. I know the main card is going to be starting at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. over on the West Coast. Go down to the O2 Arena in London, England. Both the prelims and main card on ESPN+. Some familiar cards, names on the prelims. Mark Diakase taking on Joseph Duffy. Diakase used to being a favorite in most of his fights, an underdog here against Joe Duffy, famous, of course, for his win against Conor McGregor back in the Ireland days. Duffy -185, a favorite over Mark Diakase. Tom Breeze, a -140 favorite over Ian Heinisch. Dan IG, a favorite, -145. Arnold Allen, -135, taking on Jordan Rinaldi in the top build fight on the prelims. Thoughts on the prelims before we get up to the main card? You know, they're What I do like is when I look at the odds on a lot of these prelim fights, a lot of close odds, which means we should see a lot of wars, a lot of back and forth. This should be an entertaining preliminary card to watch, although the names on it might not be the most familiar with the mainstream fan. Or the hardcore fan in that case. I have no idea who Saparabek Safarov is.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a one for the very hardcores, and hopefully this will be a nice breakthrough for some of the fighters who have been making their way on what I like to call the UFC international circuit, where they kind of let a lot of the, you know, your Eliseo Zaleski dos Santos is rack up so many wins before they get into kind of the big, you know, your Las Vegas cards, your pay-per-views and numbered cards and things of that nature. Hopefully this will be a nice showcase for a lot of them, because there definitely looks to be some nice matchups on paper. Tom Breeze versus Ian Heinisch. Very excited for that one. Glad to see Tom Breeze get in there. Be almost a year since he's been in the octagon, after almost a 2-year layoff since his May win over Dan Kelly, but should be very nice there. Danny Henry versus Dan Ige, good fight there. Both guys on a couple fight winning streak. Danny Henry coming off a victor over David Tamer, I believe, and Duwadu. Definitely both these guys got some momentum on their side. Priscilla Cachoeira versus Molly McCann. Should be a good scrap for the ladies. Narimani, he's been looking good in the octagon as well. Definitely got some good victories to his name. He's taken on Mike Grundy. And Mark Giacchese versus Joe Duffy, as you mentioned. That one, I'm definitely thinking that one's going to be fireworks. Both of these guys have some great striking. Giacchese, he's shown some good TKOs. He is on a 3-fight slide right now, so going to be interesting to see how he comes out in this one, if he's going to be going for it. Joe Duffy has only been knocked out once in his career, but man, Giacchese, if anybody can do it, the Bone Crusher, he can get it done. Duffy, very well rounded himself. He's got submissions. Giacchese's only been submitted one time. But Duffy, he's also got some strikes. He's got TKOs. He's got decisions. So very well rounded himself. Should be a great scrap there. And yeah, Arnold Allen versus Jordan Rinaldi. Oh man, definitely going to be a great fight there. Arnold Allen looking like a great prospect. Great feature prelim right there.
And we get up into the main card, and this is where we start seeing a lot of fun fights. We start off with Jack Marshman taking on John Phillips. Marshman minus 155 in Vegas. I think I believe he should have. Yeah, he might be the best Welsh fighter in the UFC. Should have his contingent there watching him take on John Phillips. I'm taking Marshman. Danny Roberts versus Claudio Silva. I remember Silva's last fight in the UFC taking on Nordim Tlaib. He has looked good. And let's not forget his fight before that. He won a split decision against Leon Edwards, who's fighting on the co-main event, and the guy has yet to lose in the UFC. He's 3-0. I think his kryptonite, so to speak, is going to be his aggressive style, leaving himself open. And I've seen in more than one fight, the guy just fights with this aggressiveness that you've got to appreciate. But it leaves me thinking, you know, at what point is somebody going to be able to counter this all-out aggression? And I believe that he might have found his maker in Danny Roberts. Looking at the Vegas odds, actually, Silva is the favorite, minus 145, so I am going against Vegas here. Nathaniel Wood, one of the biggest favorites on the card, minus 325. Actually, that puts him as the biggest favorite I think he defeats Jose Alberto Quinones, and we have Dominique Reyes against Volkan Ozdemir. You know, this is a guy who came to being a title contender pretty quickly at 205. Possesses some incredible KO power, but Dominique Reyes has been looking like one of the hottest prospects at 205 for a reason. And actually, Vegas is all aboard on the Dominique Reyes train. Reyes, a minus 265 favorite, which, you know, I do agree with. I think you'll see Volkan do what he's done in a lot of fights and try and clinch up and neutralize and land some hard punches in the clinch. But I think Reyes might just be a little bit too elusive and might come out with a decision victory, I'll go with, in this one. Before we get to the co-main and main event, Pat, what do you think about these fights that lead up on our ESPN Plus main card?
Oh, we got some solid scraps in London here, Jake. I'm with you. I'm going with Jack Marshman over John Phillips. Should be a good contest, though. Both guys are, I believe, 1-3 in their last four, but Marshman fighting close to home, definitely going with him. I'm going with Vegas. I'm taking Claudio Henrique da Silva over Danny Roberts. Fairly inactive over the last 5 or so years. This will be his fourth fight, I believe. Two fights in 2014 and one fight in 2018, but 3-0 in the UFC. Hopefully, that lack of activity will mean he's at 100% and is in a good place physically, and he will certainly need to be against Danny Hot Chocolate Roberts. He's on a 2-fight streak right now, if I'm not mistaken himself. Definitely got some good victories to his credit. TKOs, submissions, decisions. Both of these guys getting done everywhere it goes. Should be a good scrap. I am leaning with Da Silva. Nathaniel Wood, definitely going with him myself over Quinones. Should be a fun fight there. Nathaniel Wood definitely looking like a great prospect. Victories notably over Johnny Eduardo and Ewell in 2018. Quinones, though, also on a really good streak himself, having defeated Taruto Ishihara in his most recent fight, notably. But yeah, should be fireworks there at 135. And then Dominique Reyes versus Volkan Ozdemir. Definitely looking forward to that one at 205. I'm going with Dominique Reyes as well. But man, Ozdemir, he's definitely got super heavy hands. He's very skilled himself. Both these guys ripped at 205. Good to have some newer prospects in the division here. I mean, I guess I can't really call Ozdemir a prospect. He's already fought for the title, but Dominique Reyes certainly at prospect status as of right now anyways. I think he's well on his way to cementing himself as the real deal. And if he can get past Ozdemir, he's probably pretty dang close to a title shot, if not getting one.
Yeah, and I hate to make it sound like I'm overlooking Volkan Ozdemir, because the guy is a hell of a 205-er, put together 5 straight wins before losing fights to, at the time, the champion in Daniel Cormier, and the most recent title contender in Anthony Smith. Just, I feel like Dominique Reyes, style-wise, is not a good matchup. And similarly, Leon Edwards, hell of a fighter. I think he has a future at 205. His last loss, or not at 205, and in the UFC, I mean, at 170. You look at his record since losing to the current champ, Kamaru Usman. He's railed off 6 wins in a row. But style-wise, Gunnar Nelson is a tough matchup for anyone, and I'm actually kind of leaning toward Gunnar in this one, just because he is one of, you know, although he I think is only ranked 13th at welterweight right now. When it comes to the puzzle of beating a fighter, Gunnar Nelson is one of the hardest puzzles to figure out because his striking is there. And when it comes to groundwork, clinch work, there are only a few names in the entire sport that are more technically savvy than Gunnar Nelson. You look at the fights he's dropped. All of them have kind of been weird, different reasons. He obviously lost that KO to Santiago Ponzinibbio, dropped decision losses to Damian Maya and Rick Story, but also has a lot of impressive wins mixed in there. This will be a good litmus test for both guys. And even though Leon Edwards is the slight favorite in Vegas, I think on the co-main event, just something is telling me that Gunnar stylistically has the nod here, if I'm going with my gut. Pat?
Yeah, this is a really tough fight for me to call. Leon Edwards and Gunnar Nelson, definitely a couple of really top fighters at 170 pounds. Edwards, he's got victories over Donald Cerrone, Peter Zapata, Brian Barberena, Vicente Luque. Gunnar Nelson, maybe a little bit higher caliber of opposition, though. Taking out Alex Cowboy Oliveira, taking out Alan Jopan, Albert Einstein Tumanov, Rick Story. He's probably got the bigger names on his scorecard there, but man, styles make fights. We know that that's how it goes. And Leon Edwards is a super tough out for anybody. He's a fantastic striker. I probably am going with Gunnar Nelson in this one, though, just because of the ground game. I don't recall seeing a whole lot from Edwards. I know he does have 3 submission victories on his record, so he's definitely got some taps. But Gunnar Nelson, he's definitely got some high-level grappling chops, and his striking is pretty dang good, too. Not so much in the boxing style, but more in the karate striking, Lyoto Machida type of counter-striker type of situation. But similar to Machida, when he finds those openings, he has dropped many a person, and he's definitely gotten some good TKOs himself. He's got some great ground and pound as well to go with his submission game. So, man, super tough fight. And this is in Leon Edwards' home territory, but not too far away from where Gunnar Nelson trains. So, I'm going with Gunny in this one.
You bloody wanker. Moving to the main event, you've got the hometown guy, or he might not be the hometown guy, but the home country guy, Darren Till, taking on Jorge Masvidal. And I'm going Till here. I'll get all the theatrics out of the way. But sort of like the Vulcan fight, I hate picking against Jorge Masvidal because he's shown to be so resilient against so many different kinds of fighters. I just think back, and I hate to apply MMA math here, but I think about how Jorge Masvidal really struggled with the distance issue that Stephen Thompson posed in their fight. And with Darren Till being so lanky, I think he will be smart. He's shown in other fights that he's good at fighting from range and taking advantage of being one of the biggest welterweights in the UFC. And I think that's what we see in this fight. I think at times this fight might be boring because I think both guys know it. You know, at least as far as Till, he wants to keep this fight on the outside, and Jorge Masvidal, really his game plan to win might be to clinch it up and might be to try and apply some of his wrestling, because Till really showed some weak points in the title fight against Woodley there on the ground. And as good as a technician as Jorge Masvidal is standing up, he is not a slouch on the ground whatsoever. So this might at times, you know, as much as you're being promised a brawler versus brawler main event of fireworks, this fight might have its slow moments. That being said, I'm still going with Darren Till here. And I think we see a Ben Askren call out. Because, I mean, as far as Askren, this, you know, both guys are dream stylistic matchups for what he brings to the table. And I don't think anything would benefit him more than a fight against Darren Till that might vault him up to a title shot. So it makes sense for Ben to be a guest fighter and to call out the winner. Till is -260 in Vegas. That line honestly seems kind of fair. I think it will be Till, the home countryman, getting his hand raised at the end there. Pat, last topic before we take it home.
Well, Jake, this should be a pretty sweet main event. I can see where you're right, though, this being maybe more of a measured fight. You know, the main event, the higher up you get in the rankings, you know, these guys just get more and more talented. And Masvidal and Till, definitely two of the most talented strikers and definitely very talented mixed martial artists. I know Till maybe has a little bit more evolving to do as far as the ground game is concerned, but Masvidal definitely has game everywhere it goes. Fantastic striking. I'm kind of surprised that Till is a -260, considering I feel like Masvidal may have a few more tools in his toolbox, but Darren Till, he's definitely a very fantastic specimen. Great striking, very tall, very large frame, a gigantic 170-pounder. And Jake, as you mentioned, he did have problems with the reach and the distance on Stephen Thompson.
An absolute unit, as they say over there.
Yes, truly a true unit, a glorious unit.
I'll show you a glorious unit. Penis
joke. No, I didn't. But, no. Enough about units and stuff. See, now I got a brain, a unit on the brain. Masvidal may have some trouble overcoming the distance and the striking being both of these guys' games. I don't know. I think things may be in favor of Till here, but man, Masvidal, he has been in every organization there's been. He's fought just about everybody. He's fought the who's who, and he's beaten a ton of names himself. I mean, he could certainly get it done against Darren Till. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he beats Darren Till this coming Saturday, but I'm going with the hometown guy. That's I feel like this one will be primarily on the feet. Although I'm probably very wrong, and Masvidal is probably, Jake, as you mentioned, he's probably just going to come in, shoot some takedowns, something like that. It would probably behoove him to. I don't know. Let's see if he'll get it though. It's gonna be an interesting fight, no matter how it plays out. I think it'll be a good main event. I'm going with Darren Till.
You heard it here first, folks. We're both going Till. If you like the podcast, hit the happy face button and the bell and the balloon button. I don't know what you're listening to the podcast on, but subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at the MMA Podcast. The MMA Podcast.com is a website that has been neglected by me up to recently. Maybe I'll put some news stories on there. Maybe I won't. Who knows? The only way to find out if I do, though, is to check it out at TheMMAPodcast.com. But I can't guarantee we will be tweeting. So your best bet is to follow us on the Twitter at TheMMAPodcast. We're always posting up hot takes, hot links, hot vids. Pat is also on Twitter. He's one of the hottest follows around. Named by People Magazine as one of the top 50 young influencers on Twitter. At Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, anything for the people before we leave them here in a heap of tears and units?
Oh, but I was going to say, I got a unit for the people this time, Jake. Hey. Usually it's nothing but love, but this time it's nothing but units. Oh, my goodness, so many of them. No, I'm just kidding. It's always love. It's always love. Every time, Jake, it's love. For you, for the people, the listeners, everybody out there, all the people who love watching grown men and women beat the ever-loving piss out of each other and just leave each other maimed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I got nothing but love for you.
Brings a smile to my face. God bless America. God bless MMA. And God bless you, the listener. Mwah! Big kiss to you all listening to the show, even if you didn't want it. That's assault. We'll be back next week breaking down this card, previewing the next week. We love the shit out of you. Like Pat says, keep your nose to the grindstone. Keep grinding away. We're all in this one big happy family. We love the shit out of you. Shit out of you? We love the shit out of you. And until next time, we motherfucking gone, people. Peace.